This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nelly. Our guest this week is Adam Bergman, Managing Director at Ecotech Capital. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Ecotech's Adam Bergman next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The concept of sustainability has been in the agriculture industry for more than a couple of decades, but the definition varies by industry and investor. Adam Bergman is the managing director at Ecotech Capital. He says while perspectives over climate may vary among congressional leaders and voters, industry is embracing climate-friendly farming practices.
I personally look at sustainability as resource efficiency. How do we use the resources we have most efficiently? How do we cut down on waste? How do we use technology to make our lives easier, but at the same time, not using all the resources on the planet? There's been a significant move over the last two decades on this topic. I started working, as I often refer to, at the intersection of technology, innovation, and sustainability back in 2004. And it was a topic that people were just starting to discuss. We had seen some incentives come in initially around solar and wind in the U.S., Germany, Japan. We also saw some interesting incentives come in on the biofuel side that was pushing to use more ethanol again almost 20 years ago. And we saw people starting to become more knowledgeable about really what's happening in the climate. And I like to say over the last two decades, we've seen more and more. And I would argue a lot of it is being driven by people. And people, particularly younger people who have concerns about the future. But I would say that what I noticed about a decade plus ago was we're starting to see business more focused on it. And one area of business particularly is the financial services sector when we get into both insurance and lending, because those parties have the most to lose. And if you think about the weather events we're having and whether it's hurricanes that are hitting places where they haven't really hit before. If you think about the storm that hit western North Carolina last year, or you think about gale force winds that are like hurricanes hitting Iowa, like the derecho did a few years ago. We just had big fires in California. I think people are just trying to figure out what's going on around sustainability so we can both be ready to adapt to any changes on the weather side, but try to take back the impact that it's having as much as possible. So for me, I see more people focused on sustainability because it's impacting their lives more than it has in the past.
Sustainability, is it a gimmick or is it a reality? And how do you monetize the value of effort towards sustainable practices to monetize the effort in the area?
Yeah, it's definitely not a gimmick. There is real things happening in society that are being impacted by what I would call changes in the weather patterns or volatile weather. And I think the question really comes down to, and I'll take it as you ask about a gimmick, is we've seen a lot of capital that's been invested into companies who say that they're going to have some specific impact around sustainability. And I think it's fair to ask over that period where hundreds of billions of dollars has been raised, what's actually occurred? Has it made a difference? Has there been change? I'd argue in some areas we've seen significant performance. Solar is one where when I started working in it over 20 years ago, there was about 1 gigawatt of solar globally. And today there's well over 2,000 of gigawatts of solar installed globally. So we've seen huge growth there. We've seen electric vehicles, which have continued to expand. The U.S. has been slower than, say, Europe or China, but they're expanding. And other technologies that have the opportunity to have an impact so we can reduce what's going on with the weather volatility. So there's a lot that can be done. But I often start off with the statement of you have two different topics that are really enabling change to happen around sustainability. On one hand, you have consumers, and again, a lot being driven by a lot of younger people who are concerned about climate change. But you also have the opportunity to have performance and ROI from companies. And in one area I often talk about is in agriculture, regenerative agriculture. A lot of people are focused on regenerative agriculture from the perspective of carbon sequestration. I look at it a little differently. I look at it as how can you help a farmer institute practices that will make the farm more profitable? How do you put an ROI in a farmer's hand by helping them change the practices they're doing to make them actually more effective, to make the soil healthier, and to have them be more profitable? So I think there's a lot of different ways people are going to approach sustainability, but to me, it a lot has happened over the years where people have made some very big pronouncements that just haven't come true. And I think for the sector and where I work with my clients to be successful, we have to put out realistic expectations of what's achievable today.
Someone discussed the period that there were industries that really weren't willing to make investment themselves in sustainable practices, but they were willing to pay a farmer if they were willing to institute some practices so that they could say they were supporting it, or it gave their industry a better light in the eye of the consumer.
We've seen that starting out. I often say I think it's very challenging, and we talk about often the carbon markets. Well, most of the U.S., the carbon markets are voluntary, so if people start to follow certain practices and have carbon sequestration, and then the climate changes in terms of how people are approaching these topics, I always get concerned because people can walk away because they're voluntary rather than mandatory. So, yes, we saw some companies, and I still tell you I think many companies that are consumer-focused, so some of the companies that do apparel or consumer electronics or CPG companies will have policies that continue to focus on sustainability. But I think it's been pretty evident over the last couple months that when you have a change in an administration that has different perspectives, they probably are, you're going to see the business community change how they are approaching things. Under a Biden administration, a number of companies were very focused on sustainability, were implementing practices, and if Kamala Harris had won, I'm sure we would have seen those companies continue to move in that direction, and it might have even accelerated. But when the Trump administration came in, it became very clear that that's not a priority, and business goes to where they see opportunities, as well as not wanting to get in the crosshairs of an administration who has different perspectives.
I still go back to the gimmick idea from a perspective of marketing, and I'm not criticizing any business, but there was one advertisement I recall on TV that said, if you'll drink our beer, we'll plant a tree. It didn't say how much beer you had to drink in order to get a tree planted, nor how many trees might be planted overall, but they were trying to present themselves as a greener company than their competition.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of that over the years. And again, it accelerates when you have a government in place that is very pro-sustainability and is supporting it and is getting corporates to get behind that. And the question is, does it really make a difference? And I think it's a great question you asked, which is, How many trees did they plant? What type of impact did it have? I think you do see, unfortunately, a lot of companies initially come out and do greenwashing where they say we're doing all these great things. But if you dig into it, the impact they're having is limited. But there are companies who are actually spending and putting the effort in to ensure that they're following more sustainable practices. But it's very easy for companies just to say they're doing something, because typically there's very little follow-up and people don't know whether they are actually implementing all the components of a sustainability strategy and what the impact of it is.
Former Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack talked about using carbon capture and sustainability as an alternate farm income source, but there was a trouble with the concept in that if two farmers had fields that were 100 acres each, the farmer that would employ no-till practices or sustainable agriculture practices for the first time might be eligible for funds. But if you had been the producer that had already made the transition to no-till farming and color crops and sustainable agriculture practices, the fact that you had already done it, you weren't eligible.
And that's a tough one. And I think it's very fair, particularly as we look in agriculture, to see how are we going to incentivize farmers to do the right thing? And to me, the right thing is the most efficient, sustainable production capabilities they can have. And you are right. There are a number of farmers who've already moved in that direction because they realize they could make more money doing it. And others are now seeing an opportunity to make extra income by moving in that direction. But I think it's challenging when some have already done it and you're incentivizing others to do the same, that it's just not in all areas, things just aren't going to be equal. And the key is, can you put in a policy that's going to stand the test of time? And as you mentioned, Tom Vilsack wanted to do this, but the reality is the new Ag Secretary, Brooke Rollins, I'm sure has a very different perspective of how to incentivize people or whether to for sustainability. So I think it's very difficult when you start to try to implement policies and they're voluntary because they'll go away after some point, likely if a politician with different perspectives comes in and leads the government.
You mentioned two areas that I'd like to draw a parallel if I can, that of solar energy and also of electric cars. As I recall, Washington offered pretty significant incentives to develop the solar industry and also for subsidies, even for those who would buy electric cars. So for agriculture to continue to move forward in these sustainable agriculture practices, the move toward regenerative agriculture, there are losses in the beginning, but there's a return on the end. If we're going to move towards sustainable aviation fuel, where it appears to me there will have to be some sort of long-term plan by Washington to incentivize these areas to grow until they become efficient and offer return on investment for those who have been pioneers in these areas.
Jeff, you are covering what I think is the biggest opportunity and potentially the biggest threat to the ag tech sector. So it was, in my estimation, a huge positive that recently we had the head of the House Ways and Means Tax Subcommittee, their chairman Mike Kelly and the ranking member Mike Thompson, really put forward a bill called Supporting Innovation in Agriculture Act of 2025. And you are correct. I'm very open in saying solar and wind scaled because the U.S. government got behind them very strongly in incentives. EVs have had strong incentives for a number of years, which really helped the companies get to scale who were producing, Tesla being the probably best example. Biofuels, there's huge incentives that have led to ethanol being grow significantly over the past two decades. And one of the things that's very apparent, and I see all the time in the companies I work with, it is new companies who are entering markets that have existed for anywhere from generations to centuries to millennia in the case of agriculture, are going to be forced to compete against incumbents, often who are oligopolies, who are typically large companies, who have strong amounts of balance sheet cash. They have name recognition. They have distribution. Let's be honest. They have all the advantages, and these new startup companies have to come compete against them in these trillion-dollar sectors where they're at a huge disadvantage. And I think it's not surprising we've seen a lot of challenges with ag tech companies really being in position to get a lot of market traction and grow. So when I look forward, I think it's going to be imperative for incentives to be able to come from the government. Now, one of the major challenges that is out there is that the agriculture sector as a whole is probably the sector that gets more government support than any sector around. And that's not just in the U.S. It's pretty much in every country around the world. And it's unlikely that there's going to be additional capital coming in to support ag tech. So the big question is, with all this capital already supporting the ag sector, how can we get some of government funding to move towards supporting tech and innovation, which I personally believe is going to be one of the catalysts to ensuring we have food security, because I think food security is a topic that Washington does not spend enough time talking about. I often say that during the COVID pandemic, our food supply chain bent. Luckily for all of us, it did not break, but it was closer to breaking than a lot of people know or would be focused on. So there is a need for how we're going to approach tech and innovation. And without government support for it, it's unlikely for it to be successful initially. So you talk about a couple of the topics, like SAF. SAF's a really interesting area. I talked before about how much has gone into ethanol. Ethanol production is significant. A lot of corn is used for it, I think about 30%+ annually. But one of the challenges out there potentially is if we continue to see more electric vehicles produced, they don't use any ethanol. So what's going to happen to that ethanol production if we see EVs move from where they are today, 6 or 8% up to 20% over the next decade? Well, there's going to be a lot less ethanol used. So what's that corn going to be used for? Because corn prices are already low, and I don't think people want to see it continuing to go down. So something like SAF is a good outlet for it. But SAF is a new technology, and for those who don't know, SAF is sustainable aviation fuel, and it is an opportunity, and we've seen a number of the airlines talk about it. But again, I would argue the airlines were talking about it during a Biden administration where sustainability was at the forefront. Are airlines going to be focused on it today when the Trump administration is in charge and is probably not moving for a switch from diesel fuel to SAF? Probably not. So I think when we want to see changes made in sectors that have been around for a long time and the incumbents don't have an incentive to move and the customers aren't pushing them, I think it's going to take support. And if we talk about regenerative farming, I think as you rightly point out, regen agriculture is asking people to make some changes. And sometimes those changes actually have higher costs and they could have negative impact on yields. And it's very difficult to ask a farmer who gets 40 chances in their lifetime typically to make a living, to implement practices that could take 2 or 3 years to be successful. And in those 2 to 3 years, they might make less money. So I think there's a lot of need from the government to support it. One of the things I'm most concerned about in the U.S. today is food security. And I don't think there's enough politicians, particularly in Washington, thinking about what these challenges our farmers face today are and getting behind them with the right type of support so they can be successful and we don't have to continue to worry about will we have enough food in the future for U.S. Consumers.
Adam, is there investment capital ready to invest in the agriculture sector, whether food or fuel, that would embrace new technologies, that would push towards sustainability if they just had clear direction from either the marketplace or from Washington?
I think the answer to that is fundamentally yes. And I want to give some context. Right now, ag and food tech as an industry is suffering. It's facing a lot of challenges. it went through a fantastic period in some people's perspective from 2018 to 2023. The sector raised $40 billion globally. It has since seen a huge amount of capital dry up, and a lot of the investors who initially supported it have stepped away. But there's no lack of interest. I often talk about the mega trends that make ag tech and food tech exciting and why I'm bullish in the future, and that is food security, health and nutrition, and sustainable food systems. Those three topics are areas that are only going to get bigger in the future. It's unlikely any of them are solved in the near term, and people are looking for solutions. However, one of the challenges that remains is most of that capital is focused on investing into companies that have positive EBITDA, cash flow, or profitability. And most of the companies just aren't there today. So if we have business models at work, and maybe we need customers willing to pay a certain price today or government support to help push that price down initially as the company scale and can get its cost structure be competitive, those are factors that are going to have a big impact. Again, I'm a big believer in initial government support. How do you get the government to support technology such that technology has a chance to scale and get its cost structure down and then become competitive against existing products? If you're able to do that, as solar did, as EVs have been able to get there, as energy storage batteries have, you're going to be able to be successful and compete on even playing field. But until that point, you're going to have companies producing products in small quantities, which are going to be higher costs, and they're trying to compete against commoditized industries. And that's just going to be difficult. It's rare that companies are able to do that. I often talk about if you compare, say, ag and food tech or solar or EVs to other areas that people like to talk about, technology, which is like social media, initially gaming, even AI, those are technologies that came into industries that were, if they existed before, were nascent initially or small, or there were no huge incumbents. So they didn't face this type of a playing field. And by the way, they also came into industries that were probably higher value, higher priced products. The real challenge that most people in the agriculture sector face is if you're doing anything and producing a product to sell at market, you're going to be producing and likely competing against a commoditized industry. It's a challenge indoor farming faces. How do you go and compete against outdoor growers who have been doing it for thousands of years and optimize their production processes, have great distribution, marketing, and now you're coming in and you have one indoor farm that's producing at 1% size or less than the average grower who's doing it outdoors. So there's a lot of challenges out there, but capital is not going to be a challenge for the sector once the sector shows that it can make it economically. It's just the challenge today because these companies aren't economic yet.
Well, Adam Bergman, we want to thank you very much for your participation in the AgriPulse Summit in Washington, D.C., and then especially here for your participation in this edition of Open Mic. Adam, it is Open Mic, and today you've got the last word.
Well, first, I appreciate the opportunity to speak today and appreciate being asked to speak at the AgriPulse conference. I think that my biggest and most important takeaway is just there are challenges we're going to see and the food and ag sector going forward, and they're probably going to be more pronounced in the coming years. And I think it's just really imperative that we get political leaders to focus on how tech and innovation can be beneficial for the food and ag sector and can help solve problems. It's not a panacea, but it's a really good first step to look at the innovations that are out there and figure out how we can support them. And I think most importantly, I don't think people in the food and ag sector should look at technology as the enemy. They should be looking at technology as part of the solution because companies that implement technology, growers, farmers, whatever it is, from specialty to permanent to row crops, these innovations, if done properly, are going to help farmers make more money. And to me, that's the most important thing. If we want technology to work, The technology has to be easy to use, has to be effective, and has to provide an ROI to a farmer. And if we want food to be adopted in the future, it has to taste good, have a reasonable price, and appeal to consumers. If we're able to use technology in both those areas, we're going to see adoption accelerate, and that's going to be good for the country.
Our thanks to Adam Bergman, Managing Director at Ecotech Capital, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.